So in the city of Boston, we have an ordinance where all operating buildings have to report what they're using for energy. So the data exists for what my neighbor is using. Class A office building, they're using X, and it's measured in energy units. So we can measure what our prediction is for Winthrop based on the design criteria we use. And in many cases, we could be 164% better than a Class A office building and 65% better than those office buildings that are LEED Platinum, which was considered, you know, top of the energy saving model prior to Winthrop. That means that's a bunch of carbon that you don't put into the atmosphere.
Located in the heart of Boston's financial district, Winthrop Center is on track to be the largest passive house office building in the world. Developer MP Boston, the local arm of Millennium Partners, is seeking certification by the exacting Passive House Institute. In doing so, it is pushing the boundaries for energy efficiency, carbon emissions reduction, and workplace wellness, and it hopes other developers will follow their lead. I'm CPE Executive Editor Therese Fitzgerald. Welcome back to Sustainability Street, our podcast on the intersection of commercial real estate and the world we live in. For this episode, I interviewed Millennium Partners Principal Kathleen McNeil on the science and the marketing behind this groundbreaking project. Let's get started. Passive house design first emerged in Germany in the 1990s. As you can tell by the name, it was initially intended for single-family homes as a way to drastically reduce energy consumption and improve air quality through a tight, robust facade and a ventilation system that steadily supplies filtered fresh air. Over the past decade, it has been scaled up to create highly insulated apartment buildings, institutional properties, and office buildings. But it has never been used for anything of the scale of Winthrop Center, which when completed will consist of 812,000 square feet of office space, 321 luxury condominiums, and a multi-floor public gathering space and throughway called the Connector.
When we decided to build Winthrop Center, we want it to go beyond what's available for sustainability, which back in 2016, when we were doing the design, was really LEED Platinum. Our team had worked on a project for Cornell that was passive house. It was a dormitory. And we realized that's a really great concept. How come we can't use it in commercial office? And that's what we set about to do. And that's what we're in the middle of doing.
So you had a vision 5 years ago. What did you need to do to get that vision off the ground?
So interestingly enough, we needed to go to Germany and meet with Passive House Institute and review with them some of the rules, regulations, and methodologies that they use to measure a passive house building because it didn't work for an office building. For example, when you work in an office building, there's generally several people in the space at one time, and therefore, by nature, you're generating heat, and the lighting is generating heat, and the equipment's generating heat. That's not really factored in when you're doing a home, although, of course, we've all experienced when you have a big party, it gets hot. So we had to convince Passive House that the metrics for an office building needed to be slightly adjusted in order for it to make sense to scale up and to do it on a commercial level. So the Passive House Institute looked at us and thought, I guess we should think about this and how the metrics can be evolved for it to be scaled up for commercial. And we decided to become a pilot program for Passive House as far as commercial, because they had not certified anything of this nature or size, and we had not built anything of this nature or size. So we are working collaboratively with them on a regular basis, especially through the design as we right size the HVAC. When you have a very tight facade like this, obviously you need more fresh air. You don't want to have a sick building. So as we manage to bring in all the extra fresh air that's needed, but at the same time, do it in an energy responsible manner. So it's been a bit of a learning process, but not really painful.
And you chose Handel as your architect to make the vision a reality. Did you select them because they had a lot of Passive House experience?
So I think a lot is not really accurate, because there haven't been a lot of Passive Houses built or Passive House construction done. They had, however, done a fairly large scale at Roosevelt Island for Cornell, which they won in a competition. So they learned a lot. They worked on that project with Stephen Winters and with the facade company called Vidaris, which has since changed their name to Socotec. So those three team members did have experience with a scaled up version of Passive House. So yes, we decided to capitalize on that experience. Handel was already an architect that we worked with very closely on all of our residential. They're not as strong on the office side, but we brought in some supplemental local office expertise to help us with the, you know, the layout of what an office needs to be. But in any case, that was great. They understood what they were signing up for. Now, the construction side and the subcontractors, then you get into a whole nother world of finding a curtain wall company that could build this robust wall. That was the next challenge. And it's not an off-the-shelf product. So the companies had to understand it and had to sign up and be willing to work with us because it's performance-based. So we had to do a lot of pre-testing to make sure that whatever wall we were going to get, in fact, could meet all these requirements. And we did luck out, and we did a deal with Sodawall, and they're up in Ontario. And we bought our glass from a German company called Interpaint.
In addition to gathering all the right people in Boston, MP Boston needed to submit to exhaustive testing by the Passive House Institute.
And we have done our first testing. You have to do on-site testing. So the quality control is much stricter than something you would do for LEED. So we've started our on-site testing, and so far that's going very well. And that's something they're learning with us as well, because that's very rigorous testing. And when you do an office building, you're trying to overlap with moving tenants or allowing tenants to start build their space. So there's some tension there about how much testing, when the testing should be done. And we've been working with Passive House to refine that, not just for our project, because we kind of have to do it, but as they go forward, they should be able to maybe reduce the requirement to be more of a sampling as opposed to, you know, every square footage.
Along with all electric new construction, Passive House is gaining momentum as environmentalists, developers, and lawmakers try to find ways to decarbonize buildings before they are built, rather than remediating and offsetting the carbon they emit after they are built. Passive House standards proactively fight climate change because if you use less energy, you produce less carbon.
Yep. So in the city of Boston, we have an ordinance where all operating buildings have to report what they're using for energy. So the data exists for what my neighbor is using. Class A office building, they're using X, and it's measured in energy units. So we can measure what our prediction is for Winthrop based on the design criteria we use. And in many cases, we could be 164% better than a Class A office building, and 65% better than those office buildings that are LEED Platinum, which was considered top of the energy saving model prior to Winthrop. That means that's a bunch of carbon that you don't put into the atmosphere. So this is the best pathway we could find to reducing carbon. Are we completely carbon free? No. We live in New England. There were some things we weren't willing to risk, but we're very close. And the commitment we made is we'll do carbon offsets for the gap, which is where the industry is being pushed from a regulatory standpoint as well to get to net carbon zero. But we're ahead.
When you say you live in New England and you didn't want to risk it, you mean because of the temperature?
Yes, it mostly the temperature swings. You know, you could have a 60 degree day and you could have a 0 degree day. So what I'm really saying is we did use gas, natural gas, and natural gas is being phased out when people start to talk about carbon. We have it only for our boilers. I taught a class this morning on sustainability at MIT and I asked, you know, okay, why do you think we did this? And they said, oh, because you wanted your appliances to be gas. I said, well, it's funny. We always did gas cooking. That was something that was important to our marketing people. However, we're doing induction cooking. So we're breaking new ground there. And, you know, slowly we'll wean ourselves off gas. But the only thing we're using gas for is the heating component for both hot water and for heating as an element in the building.
Will any of the other appliances be electric powered?
Absolutely. So I mentioned the cooking. We'll be doing the induction cooking instead of gas cooking. I've found a wonderful electric fireplace, which a lot of people cringe when they hear that, but I'm excited to share the technology that has come along because the electric fireplaces really are much, much more romantic than the kind of the picture frame that you can imagine. The big domestic water system is gas-fired, but several of the smaller office tenant bathrooms, for example, will have electric water heaters for the restrooms on the individual office floors. And we're also collecting the rainwater. We store it in a large tank in the basement, and we use that when the office tenants flush their toilets. So we are repurposing water that would normally just get pushed in through the sewer system, which is not a great thing to do.
How much more does it cost to build a building to passive house standards?
Now, in today's world, it does cost more. I think as we go forward and people become more familiar with it and curtain wall companies start to make this product, those costs will become negligible. We paid about 3% more in our construction cost because we had to really buy this curtain wall. We generally pay more for our exterior wall than an average developer anyway. We have that kind of sex appeal. We want to have iconic buildings. So we didn't feel that was a huge premium to do what's right for the environment.
And do you think cost is the reason there are not more passive house projects like this? Or is it the lack of prototypes?
I don't think it's the cost because I don't think it's cost prohibitive. I think it's the knowledge base. I think the industry here in the US did not catch on to what the passive house was all about. And part of that was because it was single family residential and because there wasn't a big education campaign. I think as people realize this is the best pathway to carbon zero, it will become normal. It will be the new norm.
Passive house buildings are among the healthiest places to live and work because they supply highly filtered fresh air to their inhabitants. And the tight facade, it reduces the amount of air pollutants and noise that can seep through the exterior. Meanwhile, the humidity level is managed, and that reduces the spread of germs and increases comfort. Kathy, it sounds like MP Boston was ahead of its time 5 years ago, given the hyper-focus on wellness today.
The team decided they really wanted to do something beyond what everyone else was doing. They looked around the globe and they looked at a project in Amsterdam called The Edge. And the Edge was built exclusively for Deloitte, but we found that many of the people that worked there said, I want to go work in that building. Not I want to go work for Deloitte, I want to go work in that building. And we realized that today's industry spends a lot of time and money on human resources and employee retention. And you don't want to constantly be retraining people, that cost you a lot of money. So we envisioned having Winthrop become a talent magnet. And when we started to think about this, we realized MIT right in our backyard is doing a lot of research on how wellness ties to cognitive behavior and how wellness allows us all to be at our best. And that became part of our story. And part of our story was to educate tenants that by coming to Winthrop, it's not just about location, 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 which used to be the real estate mantra. Mm-hmm. It's now about employees are going to be happy. They're going to want to stay with you. They're going to want to work in a building that's thoughtful about the environment and is healthy. It was a little difficult before the pandemic for people to understand why extra fresh air should matter. Like they know it's good, but it mm-hmm. wasn't on every real estate executive's mind. So especially you have a company who's going to lease space and it's the company may build widgets, but the real estate person just has to go get the real estate. And usually it's what's the best price and the best location. We had to educate them that, well, really it's about human capital and making sure your employees are healthy. And so they were getting it, but it wasn't intuitive. Now everybody understands how important fresh air is. Everyone understands how important touchless surfaces are and how you want to make sure that your employees have the option to have wellness available right then and there. What we have found as employers are bringing their employees back to work, they don't want business as usual. They don't want to be in a stuffy closed office. They want to be in something new and sexy and jazzy that speaks to them. So, you know, Winthrop is really kind of rising to the forefront of what the workplace is all about.
And you actually worked with professors from MIT?
In particular, Professor Fernandez in the environmental department. And he gave us quite a few white papers. We built a library for ourselves to understand that what we're doing is the right thing to do. So we had the science to back it up, so to say.
And you recently signed your first tenant at Winthrop Center. Cambridge Associates, a global impact and sustainability investor, will take 115,000 square feet. Well, that sounds like a tenant who can really grasp onto what Winthrop Center can accomplish for the environment and for tenants. Are you targeting tenants like that?
We really have a broad marketing campaign because when you're looking for these size commercial tenants, you have to throw the net wide. Leases only turn every so often. And the Boston marketplace has its limits. We'd like it to be more global, but it has its limits. So we throw the net wide, and then we started to do a real deep dive on anybody that was on our radar. So when we found certain tenants, we really researched who are they, what are they saying? And Cambridge Associates was so obvious that their values were aligned with what we were doing. It was like, how can you not be part of Winthrop? And we really showed them in a way how we could be partners as they go forward, how we could be part of their story, they could be part of our story. We are not landlords that turn and flip our building to be a big portfolio. We are generally in for the long haul and we want to evolve. If something new comes up, we want to be part of that. We want to make sure that we continually stay in the forefront. Now, sustainability is not necessarily everyone's starting to care about it more and think about it, but not everyone has that as the highest value. Another tenant that we look into, we might see that they're trying to grow and they want to attract the best and the brightest minds. So then we would really target our wellness. We target all of the amenity space that we have. We target the connector, which is kind of a communal space on the ground floor that's open to the public. And we introduce them to those aspects of the project. So it's changed for us as a company, as opposed to just hire your real estate broker and fight about the dollars. It really is about, you know, the way you work, the way you value who you are as an organization.
It helps, I guess, to be in the market with a brand new building that speaks to a lot of the concerns today.
Yes, exactly. I think it's very difficult for a tenant to stay put. And a lot of existing stock is going to need to put a fair amount of investment in order to catch up to where they need to be, simply for regulation, if not for market.
Any words of wisdom that you can pass on to other developers considering passive house design?
Well, imitation is the best form of flattery. And we consciously made a decision to talk about this and to not, you know, developers tend to be secretive. We consciously said, we want people to imitate us. We want other people to do this because we have to be responsible for the world we live in. And you mentioned carbon and building. And I think it's like the building industry, the built environment contributes like 40% to the carbon. So that's a big chunk. You know, you worry about cars and such, but you look at these big producers of energy and you realize we as an industry can make an impact and we should.
And the building is supposed to be completed at the end of this year?
Yeah, we're saying first quarter 2023. We hope to get our certificate of occupancy by the end of the year and start having people occupy first quarter of 2023.
Okay, Kathy, thank you so much. Good luck with the finishing and the opening of the project.
Thank you. Do you want to come for a tour? We'd love to have you.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Bye. A recent ULI report titled Greening Buildings for Healthier People highlighted the opportunities for real estate developers to employ strategies for tackling climate change that also promote the health of occupants. Passive House, the report noted, is a prime example of that integrated approach. That's all for this episode of Sustainability Street. If you have any comments on this episode or suggestions for future episodes, please reach out to me at therese.fitzgerald@cpe-mhn.com. Bye.